happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus was.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. For a long time, I've been sharing insights on how people can make better choices to live longer and happier and healthier lives. Today, virtually the entire hour is devoted to that. We'll be sharing some insights from William Falloon, publisher of Life Extension, on the latest scientific methods to reduce breast and prostate cancer risk. Be talking about that miracle seed, the chia seed. It's been around a long time. Most people don't use it. The latest on resveratrol. It has a lot going for it. And no guest, just your questions, your thoughts, and your comments. So this is one day, one show, where you have the whole hour that you can share. 888-874-4888. Now, excuse me, tomorrow evening, a really in-depth discussion, unlike anything I promise you you've ever heard in radio. I'll be taking on the international banking system, but doing so much like a forensic detective would do. How do they form? Who are they? What are their interlocking connections? That's just one thing, but from when they began till today. So you'll have a chance to really understand what we're dealing with today, because they're more powerful today than they've ever been in their past. But they're not being called out. And then I'll be doing three other commentaries, including how, are you ready for this? More than $400 billion in drug money was funneled through one American bank, and no one did a thing about it. $400 billion, that's almost a half a trillion dollars. Of course, when you realize how much money they make, and I'm going to be reporting from court documents, you would have thought this would have made front page news. It did not. And why is it when they were finally caught, nobody went to jail? What's the way the game is played? So how the banks make an awful lot of money off drug money, and all the banks. So I'll go into that. So the show I do is as a commentary. There's sometimes a guest talking about these things, but more often than not, it's sharing the insights of others or myself. And that's at 7 p.m. Monday evenings on the Progressive Radio Network. Now to the latest, chia. We all want to add things into our diet, what I call them little healthy pieces of the puzzle, and the more pieces you add, the healthier you're going to be. It's just part of an overall strategy, a health strategy. The more nutritionally rich preparations, juices, compound powders, fresh vegetables and fruits, grains, exercise, de-stressing, understanding epigenetics, that you become the energy that you focus on, but you also are influenced by the energy of others around you, even your work environment, your living environment. So each one of these pieces makes a difference in our lives. So in order to reduce the strain on our immune system, to limit inflammation, we have to take in things that are anti-inflammatory, or things that build up our immune system, our immune building. Well, in comes this little chia, chia. And it literally means strength in Mayan. We can look almost 3,000 years back in Central America, where the Aztecs utilized it as one of their principal plant sources of food. In fact, it was the third most important crop next to corn and beans. In fact, chia was considered more valuable than gold and was often used to pay taxes and tribute to the Aztec nobility. When the Aztec civilization fell during the Spanish conquest, the Spanish banned chia and other crops due to their close association with the religious systems of these ancient cultures and replaced the native crops with foreign ones such as wheat and carrots. And remnants of both the Aztec and Mayan civilizations remained in portions of Mexico where small groups of people continued using the seeds for making flour and oil and drinks from the gel that forms when the seeds are mixed in. Then you end up with this kind of it's almost like a jello or jelly consistency. I like it. I put it in a lot of different dishes. It's a superfood. There's no question about that. It's very rich in omega-3 fatty acids and proteins and dietary fiber. Now, if you look at why it's important, you have to understand the essential fatty acids. Excuse me. They're four times more concentrated than other types of sources, including other grains. And the essential fatty acids are important for respiration of vital organs, and yet the human body is unable to manufacture them themselves. It must be obtained through our diet. Well, chia ranks as having one of the highest omega-3 contents of any plant. It contains 64% alpha-linolenic acid. Flax, another popular source, contains 55%. And the omega-3:6 ratio is also highly auspicious in chia. It represents a healthy balance of 3:2. Chia is also a complete protein. It contains about 23% protein per seed. It has all the important building blocks for muscles. It's also a good antioxidant source. It has what are called chlorogenic acid, caffeic acid, and flavonoid glycosides. These are really good polyphenols, and they help your organs. They help trap free radicals and remove them from the body. So you got high fiber, ease in digestibility. It's what is called a mucilage soluble fiber. Same as blueberries, for that matter. It's very important if you have poor digestion to use chia. And also, it's absorbing more than 7 times its weight from water. So chia forms a gel. And it's very good because if you're eating fat and a lot of carbohydrate at the same meal, chia helps bind a lot of that and take it out of the system. So therefore, it helps maintain blood sugar. So it's absolutely necessary for a diabetic. And similarly, chia consumption contributes to maintaining balanced hydration and electrolyte levels within the body. And it can last a long time in a dry state. And unlike flaxseed, which have highly impenetrable outer shells, requiring them to be ground in a meal, most people don't realize when you're taking flaxseed, if you don't grind it, you're not going to benefit from it. It's going to go right through your system. And if you store it at the meal, it'll turn rancid rather quickly. Chia seeds, not so. They can be stored a long period of time. So just a very important thing I think we should be consuming, and why. I'm a big believer that there are probably 200 or 300 items we could consume that would help us if we have cancer and also can help prevent cancer. But one of the foods we do not eat as an alternative cancer treatment, but we should, are beets. Beets are very important. They increase stamina during exercise by 16%, and they're also known to break up cancers and tumors. That's why beet juice is so important if you have cancers. In fact, it was a doctor, Kozma, a Hungarian physician who used beets to break up tumors in the body, and he had a lot of good results, and the tumors were often completely eliminated. But he had to drink a lot of beet juice. Now, it was a mono approach, and I'm not supportive of mono approaches. I believe we have to use everything that works. So the tumors came back if the people stopped drinking the beet juice. He recommended about 2.2 pounds beet juice daily to break up tumors, and the results were often seen in a few weeks or months. And because beets can break up tumors so rapidly, it's wise to combine the therapy with detoxification, like colon and liver cleansing or colonics. In fact, one of the finest anti-cancer diets ever was Dr. Max Gerson. Now, Gerson was a German physician. And the way he found out that he had an important cancer therapy was not treating cancer patients. It was treating tuberculosis patients. He was the medical director of a sanatorium in Germany that helped people with tuberculosis. And he found that on the weekends, after the people had visits from their family, they always got worse. And he tried to figure out why, and he found out that they were bringing them food, and the food were highly spicy foods, meats, cheeses, breads. So he got rid of all that and didn't allow any of that in the diet, and they found out that the people did better. He also began to introduce some vegetables and juices from those vegetables. And before long, he was having major improvement in the people with tuberculosis. And then some of the people who were also in his clinic had tuberculosis and cancer, both improved. And it was another 3 or 4 years, and he became Germany's leading expert on natural approaches to tuberculosis. At that time, his therapies were not considered odd or unusual. In fact, he actually published an article in the peer-reviewed literature prior to coming to the United States. But he found something interesting once he was in the United States. He had people breaking up cancers in their body so successfully, so fast, that he would ask them in the mornings, check to see if there's any black gelatinous material in your stool. And indeed, people would bring in this black gelatinous material. These were cancer cells the body was purging. The trouble is, some of his patients actually died because the cancer was broken down so fast that the liver and the kidneys could not get it out of the system as quickly as it was being broken down. Hence, he developed the second part of his program, which was liver flushing and to make sure that you didn't end up having a whole system backed up. Hence, the colonics and changing some of the protocols so that the cancers were broken down over a longer period of time and a little slower. I don't believe in breaking down cancer cells too fast, because what if a person's liver's not functioning properly, especially if they've already had chemotherapy? Then you can bet that their liver's not going to be working well. That's why bromelain and some of the enzyme systems that are used help reestablish a healthier liver function. In any case, beets are really good at breaking down cancers, and the key cancer-fighting ingredient in beets is called betacyanin, B-E-T-A-C-Y-A-N-I-N, beta-cyanin, and it's what gives red beets their bright purple reddish color. And beets have been found to increase detoxifying compounds in the body, make it easier for the body to detoxify itself in general. And knowing this, you'll want to have some beets on a regular basis in your diet, and that's good. And then if you've got cancer and know someone who does, make sure they're taking beet juice. But I suggest that you add lemon, whole lime, whole grapefruit, meaning the skin and the pulp and the seeds, into that beet juice. Then you spike that with 5,000 milligrams of curcumin, 2,000 milligrams of green tea, and 2,000 to 3,000 milligrams of vitamin C with quercetin. Then you put in some indole-3 carbinol, or really good juice, which would be about an ounce, of broccoli and broccoli sprouts. Then you have one super-duper anti-cancer, knock-it-out-of-the-ballpark juice to stimulate natural killer cell activity and to detoxify the body in the process. Resveratrol, a lot of claims made for it, a lot of good work done on it. There was a researcher, David Sinclair, and a team at Harvard, who published an article in Nature magazine, considered the foremost scientific and important magazine in this field in the world, they talked about resveratrol and that it was able to expand the life of yeast cells. And therefore, they said, well, could this be the next anti-aging pill? Well, according to Sinclair's findings, resveratrol could activate a gene called the SIRT1 gene, S-I-R-T. And the yeast equivalent was SIRT2, which is also activated during caloric restriction in various species, including monkeys. So therefore, when you restrict your calories, when you fast maybe one day a week, when you eat less calories. Now, that doesn't mean you're eating less food. You can actually have more food, but have low-calorie foods like juices and sprouts and salads and fruits. Those are all low-calorie. So you're getting your nutrition. You're nutrient-dense, but caloric-restricted. And that creates a longer lifespan. And then add in exercise, which couples that. And then resveratrol. Now, here's what it was said. It says, quote, studies in nematode worms, fruit flies, fish, and mice have linked resveratrol to longer lives. Other studies with only resveratrol have reported anti-cancer effects, anti-inflammatory effects, cardiovascular benefits, anti-diabetes potential, energy endurance enhancement, and protection against Alzheimer's. Resveratrol has the biological effect of so many drugs wrapped up in one molecule, unquote. Middle-aged men and upwards are more aware of their own mortality, but the general public interest has not been big. Well, I would suggest this. I believe that the science is overwhelming in supporting that we should be taking 200 to 400 milligrams a day of resveratrol. Now, one other thing that I believe could extend our lifespan, and that is soy isoflavones. Isoflavone, F-L-A-V-O-N. Yes. Now, why? Soy isoflavones may activate anti-aging proteins and lead to an extension of life. And this was shown at Newcastle University in the United Kingdom. Scientists at the university's Human Nutrition Research Center and Institute for Cell and Molecular Biosciences report that soy isoflavone, as specifically the diazine, D-A-I-D-Z-E-I-N segment, can activate a protein called SIRT1, previously linked to the regulation of aging and longevity. Here's what it says, quote, the concentration of diazine that elicited the SIRT1 response exceeds achievable plasma concentrations, but is not unrealistic with respect to local intestinal concentrations following consumption of isoflavone-rich foods or isoflavone supplements, unquote. And that was published in Nutrition Bulletin. Quote, the long life expectancy and healthy aging observed in the inhabitants of Okinawa Island in Japan, who in past years consumed a low-energy diet, is often cited as evidence supporting longevity effect of energy restriction in humans. It is of interest to note that soy provided the principal source of protein in this diet, raising the possibility that some beneficial effects of the diet relevant to health, aging, and long lifespan may, speculatively, have been the result of soybean isoflavone potentiating effects mediated through activity of SIRT1, unquote. In lay language, what that means is that the citizens of Okinawa, who are Japanese, don't eat a lot of food. They have a modest amount of calories, one of the lower amounts of calories in the world. Not because they don't have a lot of food, they have a great variety, and they're very active, but because they don't believe in overeating. You rarely see overweight Okinawans, but a lot of their diet is soy. So now they're tying in this. So I would suggest getting supplements that have the soy isoflavones in them. And we know that they are DNA methylation agents, meaning they're bringing more oxygen methylation and enhancement into the cell. Vitamin E does. Coenzyme Q10 does. So all that's good for you. Now, I'm always asked about how can we do something to prevent cancers? And we have Bob on the line right now, and I'm going to answer the question for Bob, but I'm also going to talk about everyone in this audience, how to help yourself with cancer. Hi, Bob, you're on the air.
Hi, Gary. Thanks for taking my call again. And it sounds like the show was made specifically for me. So my situation is I've got an 80-year-old father down in Florida who's just been diagnosed with liver cancer and trying to figure out what are some good protocols that we may be able to implement for him.
Well, I'm happy to help you and anyone else. And have you watched the film, the 4.5-hour documentary, Preventing and Reversing Cancer Naturally?
No, actually what we just pulled out, because we have your Cancer Alternative Approach DVD, and that's what we're going to watch tonight.
Good. But this is a newer one. This is just out the last month. So it's 4.5 hours long.
Then we'll get it.
And get it, and because that will help supplement it. And in fact, I'm filming next Tuesday, or this coming Tuesday, I'll be filming two leading experts in cancer in Germany. I'll be going over to Germany to film there. I've seen their work. Their work is really phenomenal. And I've been waiting a long time to get them in the film, but now we will. So I just keep adding on to this film. In any case, for your father, there's a lot of reasons that people get cancer. But most people don't realize that the underlying cause is the aging process itself. That doesn't mean that a younger person gets cancer. It was because of aging for most people over the age, I would say, of 60. Now, one reason this fundamental cause has been neglected is that up until recently, there was little one could do to protect oneself from this. I mean, men were told you're going to get prostate cancer, but don't worry, it takes a long time to develop, and by the time it can become terminal, you'll probably be dead from natural causes. I disagree with that completely. I think we've had a completely failed war on cancer, and we've wasted over $500 billion in the process. To enable to fully understand the carcinogenic effects of aging, I would like for you to show, for example, women's breast cancer risk by age, and a quick look clearly documents that aging is the underlying cause of breast cancer. For example, by age 25, it's 1 in 19,000. By age 40, it's 1 in 217. By age 50, it's 1 in 50. By age 60, it's 1 in 24. By age 70, it's 1 in 14. By age 80, it's 1 in 10. And over 85, it's 1 in 9 women. No matter what else they have in their life. Of course, smoking and drinking and stress, x-rays of any kind at any time in their life, all that will speed up the incidence. But if you had none of that, if you otherwise lived completely what we consider healthy life, you would end up getting a higher incidence of cancer the older you were. But look at the big break. At age 25, it's 1 in 19,608 women will have breast cancer. Age 30, it's 1 in 2,000. Now, that's an enormous jump in just 5 years. And why? Because we now know that most women began to accelerate in aging at age 27. After the age of 27, a woman is already in the advanced aging process at the cellular level. You won't always see it. You may not see it for another 10 or 20 years, but it's happening. There was an article published in the New England Journal of Medicine titled Roads Leading to Breast Cancer, and there was one sentence that just stuck out, and it explained why aging cells are vulnerable to cancer. And the sentence said that cancer results from the accumulation of mutagens in genes that regulate cellular proliferation. Have you been listening to my show very long?
Well, I listen to it every day.
Okay. How many times have you heard me say that there's only two choices you ever make at anything you do in life, the right choice and the wrong choice?
You say it all the time, Gary.
But you also heard me say, too, that you'll never know whether you've made a right or wrong choice until you get to your destination, right?
True. Sure. Sure.
So what kind of work do you do, by the way?
I'm in computers myself.
Okay. So just look at it this way, just to put this in proper perspective, Bob. Let's just say that you start every morning you have a glass of apple juice with celery and cucumber. And at work, some of your friends would say, what are you doing? They're drinking their coffee. And you say, well, I don't drink coffee anymore because it's highly acidic, changes the pH of my body, can cause gastric reflux, irritates the esophageal lining, and it's a diuretic, and it can take very important minerals like selenium out of my body and molybdenum out of my body and boron out of my body. I need that. Also, this juice is known. The apples and apple skin help allow my body's muscles to work better. They help my immune system, kills cancer, lowers my blood sugar, lowers my cholesterol, and lowers my blood pressure. It's great for creating alkalinity, turns off pain, and helps reestablish healthier intestinal flow. And they say, yeah, yada, yada, but we don't believe in that. And you say, okay, well, you don't have to believe in it, but I'm going to continue doing it. So they continue taking their bagels or, their coffee, and you continue taking your drink. And at the end of 10 years, one of your buddies comes in at work, and suddenly, lo and behold, the guy finds out that he's got very high blood pressure, very high blood sugar, his cholesterol's off the chart, now he's on 6 different medications, now he's impotent. And you? You're fine. He got to his destination. You haven't. Because you have to compare your destination to someone else's to see where you're at. Did you hear the recent show I did where Elizabeth in our studio read a letter? She reads the letters that I get each day and then selects one and or two or three and then reads them on the air. And it was about a New York City police officer wrote a letter because he had one of those epiphanies. It was, I think, 3 weeks ago Sunday.
Yes, I believe I did hear that one.
He was running around Prospect Park with his father, and then his father told him at the end of the run that he and his mother were going to move back to Ireland and start a holistic homestead. And he was trying to talk his dad out of it, and his dad made a comment to him. And his dad said, son, you never know the truth of what you're doing till you reach your destination. And he said, I've reached my destination, and everything I've been doing honored the truth, where his two brothers, all of whom were police officers, died, and none of his buddies that he went into the academy or when it were in the police force with were alive. They all died, but he just finished running at 86 years of age around Prospect Park, which is 4.5-5 miles, and the son was kind of struck by it because he hadn't thought about the idea of here's his dad, 86 years old, every Sunday running around the park with him. And then he realized his dad still has a lot of his natural hair. He looks 50. He's not sick at all. And his kitchen's like a health food store. And he does all these drinks all the time. And his dad said, I've been doing this since the early 1970s when I was listening to Gary Noll. And I thought it just made sense, so I just tried it, and I never stopped. But he was afraid, being Irish Catholic, and, a lot of the Irish Catholic, especially the police, they're not going to be into veganism, right?
Right.
And if you suggest you are, they're going to think something wrong with you and immediately take you out to a tavern, get you drunk, and then beat the hell out of you. And then the next day, forget them. They have these blackouts all the time. So anyhow, he realized his dad had reached his destination, meaning he had reached the passage where he could absolutely determine that what he was doing was right. But everyone else reached their destination, and their destination was death. So the answer was a heart attack, a stroke, a lung cancer for the ones who were smoking. And it never occurred to them that what they were doing was wrong. So that idea is, we wake up one day and we ask, I have a choice. I'm going to make choice A or choice B. There's going to be a consequence. Will I appreciate the consequence tomorrow? And let's face it, if you went out tonight and you drank and you smoked or you did drugs and you ate garbage, tomorrow you will probably not know the difference. But your cells will. It accumulates And as your DNA accumulates damage one day, it cannot accumulate anymore, and you have the tipping. The tipping is the cancer, the stroke. You manifest physical symptoms. Now, here's where medicine has it exactly opposite. They come in and say, thank goodness we got this early. No, you got it 40 years late. Because this has been going on for this amount of time, it was the wrong choice. But we don't allow people to learn their lessons this way. So when you realize that doing the right thing, you have to trust in your intuition. How do you feel? That's why sometimes I allow people on the air, who the nutritionists who I hire, who use my protocols and treat people for free to help them. And we've done about, I think, around 11,000 free counseling sessions. And sometimes these people reverse their diseases, including cancer and other diseases, completely. And I bring them on the air so they can tell their story. To let people know, here's someone who reached their destination. It was bad. Now they've reached another destination, which is good. You know, so you can change. So here's the New England Journal of Medicine saying, the roads leading to cancer, it's the mutation of the DNA. Well, what caused your cells to mutate? Anything is pro-inflammatory. Well, let's make it real simple. What is inflammation-based that we eat or drink? Sodas, coffee, hot dogs, hamburgers, french fries, pizzas, meatloaf, barbecued ribs, fried chicken, fried fish, donuts, bagels, rolls. Those are all pro-inflammatory. Hence, and then add in artificial sweetener and coloring agents, all those contribute to DNA destruction. So in that one sentence, you have just learned why people contract more cancer as they grow older. Now, to clarify this further, please understand that every time a cell divides, slight mutations occur in the genes that regulate cellular proliferation. And furthermore, mutations to genes happen in response to direct insult from ionizing radiation. Now, the longer you live, the more gene mutations you encounter. And once too many regulatory genes become mutated, cells lose normal regulatory control and can turn into cancerous cells. So a basic preventative strategy is to do something about the gene mutations in your cells that make you more vulnerable to contracting cancer with each passing day. And the encouraging news, the good news, and I always like to show solutions, is you can restore healthy gene function. Now, there are, if you listen to my show and you say, Bob, that you do, you know that I always cite peer-reviewed scientific literature every single time I mention something, so that people don't think, oh, you know, who said that? Why should I believe that? Well, because this study was done in mainstream science. Your media may not have promoted it, but I don't read the media. I go to the original scientific literature every morning. So now we know this. A multitude of studies has shown cancer risk reductions of 50% or greater just based on vitamin D status. So people with higher vitamin D levels have sharply lower risks of cancer, the breast, prostate, colon, esophagus, pancreas, ovarian, rectum, bladder, kidney, lung, and uterus, along with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and multiple myeloma. 50% just with vitamin D. Now, what's fascinated us most, however, is that vitamin D protects against cancer by enabling people to regain control over the genes that regulate cell proliferation. Now, vitamin D has an effect on at least 200 human genes, and many of these genes are responsible for regulating not only cell proliferation, but differentiation and a form of apoptosis as well. And here are, let me just explain this for those in the audience who may not be aware of this. First, you have what is proliferation. That's the uncontrolled cell division, meaning cancer cells are characterized by rapid and uncontrolled division. Then you have differentiation. I just mentioned that. That's a process that cells undergo to mature into normal cells. And then you have the premature cell death, the natural termination of defective cells. Cancer cells are resistant to natural destruction, making them different to eradicate. Well, with less than optimal or low levels of vitamin D, the expression of genes that regulate the three critical processes that I just mentioned become defective. This means these regulatory genes can no longer maintain healthy cellular function, including programmed termination. The result is sharply higher cancer risks as you get less vitamin D. So it's just pennies a day to get your vitamin D. Now, while numerous studies show that people with high blood levels of vitamin D have lower cancer risk, what has been lacking was a double-blind, placebo-controlled study that specifically measured the effects of high-dose vitamin D supplements with calcium on cancer incidence in humans. And this is the kind of study that conventional medicine insists on seeing if they're to believe a nutrient or a drug really provides a healthy benefit. And well, you know, that kind of work has been done, and it's been shown to be extremely beneficial. So now we can show the following. And I'm looking at the clock. I want to give you as much as I can. I don't like to be superficial. First and foremost, as much as you can, get your father the important 2-hydroxyone and very little or no of the 16-alpha hydroxyestrone nutrients. Now, eating lots of cruciferous vegetables and taking indole-3-carbinol has been shown to increase protective 2-hydroxyestrone and reduce the dangerous estrogen metabolite called 16-alpha hydroxyestrone. If you're taking any kind of estrogen drug, natural or synthetic, or are at an increased risk of breast cancer, it's critical to know if you are consuming enough cruciferous vegetables and getting your indole-3-carbinol to achieve optimal ratios of the estrogen metabolites, meaning the more 2-hydroxyestrone in relationship to 16-alpha-hydroxyestrone. So if you're eating meat, that's 16. Eggs, 16. Bacon, 16. Ribs, 16. Vegetables, 2. You want 2. You don't want 16. So you follow me there, Bob?
Understood completely.
I would suggest starting with 6 glasses of juice a day. Use apple as your diluting juice and then celery. Then add in isoflavones derived from soy. I suggest starting at 400 milligrams because they provide natural protection against multiple types of cancer. And they're phytochemical constituents of soy. And the best two being what I mentioned earlier, the didazine, D-A-I-D-Z-E-I-N, and genistein, G-E-N-I-S-T-E-I-N. The isoflavones are very important biologically in the body, and you definitely want them if you have cancer. And for women with breast cancer, definitely you want the isoflavones. Make a big difference there. But there are other things as well that are very important that we want to have. The fruits are very important, and you want them raw. You want to get rid of the fungal mutations, industrial pollutants, anything that's in an 80-year-old body. And there's a lot of accumulation. Chelation therapy would be important. Starting at lower doses, intravenous vitamin C with glutathione would be important. And a compound called D-glucarate, G-L-U-C-A-R-A-T-E. You're going to find it in those grapefruits. That's one of the reasons I want people to have the whole grapefruit and the apples, the oranges, broccoli, and Brussels sprouts. And D-glucarate has been shown to protect against cancer-causing agents by supporting detoxification and removal of dangerous chemicals. It also protects against the mutagenic effects of carcinogens that induce cellular damage to the DNA. So make sure you get that into your father twice a day. And it's simple. D-glucarate functions by inhibiting the dangerous beta enzyme, the glucuronidase enzyme, and thus protecting the critical detoxification mechanisms. And one example of the importance of this can be seen in the risk factors for breast cancer. If you have too high a level of the 16-alpha hydroxyestrone and the beta-glucuronidase enzyme are associated with an increased incidence of breast cancer, so it can, the D-glucuronate will reduce that. That's important. Then you want lignans, L-I-G-N-A-N-S. A number of studies show that lignans protect against cancer by favorably altering estrogen metabolism, and that inhibits angiogenesis and induces cancer cells to self-destruct. And the greatest support for a role of lignans in cancer prevention has been shown for premenopausal breast cancer. And it can make a big difference in women. It could help reduce your incidence of breast cancer by 44%. And I would take that four times a day. And then I would look at the other nutrients that I have mentioned to you, which on other shows, and I mentioned even today, one of the best of all would be the 7 to 10,000 milligrams a day of curcumin. Very important. So that'll get you started. Eat those green vegetables, have those juices, get rid of all the other stuff, and you know, you should have, along with vitamin C, you should have a very positive effect on your dad. All right, Bob?
Great. We'll give it a shot. Thank you so much.
All the best to you. And I'm Gary Knoll. We're taking your calls here. You can give us a call at 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Let's say hello to Eric from New Jersey. Hi, Eric.
Hey, Gary. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. How can I help you?
I wanted to ask you specifically about food combining, the most appropriate combinations, and maybe you could refer me to a few of your books or articles where I could find that specifically. And also, I wanted to mention maybe you can have a little story coming up this week, because Mike Adams just released a FDA alert that they attacked. They want to pretty much ban all dietary supplements.
I'll be dealing with it tomorrow.
All right, great.
Okay. I wrote a book on food combining. Are you aware of that?
No.
Yeah. And, but I later found out when I was doing some research in the lab, after the book was published, that some of my own research disputed some of my earlier findings, so I told the publisher I wanted to remove the book. And they said, why? I said, because it doesn't have everything that I can prove in it. They thought it was stupid, but I was their best-selling author, so they allowed me to remove it from the market. It wouldn't have adversely affected anyone. But what I said then was that, which many of the natural hygienists said, is that you should never have many of the acid foods with subacid or alkaline foods. And I later found out that wasn't true. For example, they were so radical, mainly a Dr. Sheldon down in San Antonio, Texas, at Sheldon Sanitarium, that you couldn't even eat all your fruits at the same time. The rule was watermelon, eat alone or leave it alone. And you had to have your acid foods like lemons, limes, grapefruit, and oranges at one meal. But you'd have to have a pineapple, mango, papaya at a different meal, and the grains at a different meal than the beans. And I was doing some studies at the Institute and found out that indeed this was wrong. Here's what's right. You should not eat any form of simple sugar when you're eating fats, because the fat, depending upon the type of fat, your age, how much food you've eaten, how much liquid you have in your stomach, could take anywhere from 4 to 6 hours just to break down in the stomach. Sugars, it's instantaneous. There's no digestion. A monosaccharide can go right into the body. So what frequently happens is when you have, let's say, a cheesecake, where you have sugar and fat together, you end up with gas, or you end up with some form of indigestion because there's a fermentation process in the acidic medium at low pH in the stomach when you're not allowing sugar out. Remember, when you eat a piece of cheesecake, the stomach doesn't say, okay, we're going to keep the protein from the dairy and the fat over on this side of the stomach, and we're going to let all the sugar go out and have happy digestion. It doesn't work that way. And also people tend to overeat. They tend to have a lot of liquids, and they end up confusing the stomach, and therefore the stomach does what is called a dumping. There's literally so much food in the stomach that the pyloric sphincter flap opens and partially digested food goes into the duodenum, the top 12 inches of the stomach or the intestine, to be deacidified. But then that gets absorbed, little particles of that food that are not fully digested, because when food goes in the intestines, you go in almost like a tomato soup. It shouldn't go in chunks. Remember this rule of biology. The stomach does not have teeth. You've got to thoroughly, patiently masticate, chew your food. People don't do that. They chew, boom, gulp, down it goes. So by having beans and legumes, grains, starchy vegetables, leafy vegetables, seaweeds, you can have all those at the same time. They will all digest in the same way. Animal proteins should not be consumed. If you're consuming any animal proteins with any quick digesting carbohydrate, that's where you get bloating, gas, distension, indigestion. That part of it was correct. The rest of it was not. People just built up their own myth. And because there was no real science at the time, whoever had the most interesting and convincing sounding myth won the day. The fact that it wasn't real only came about after we started doing the science, and I happened to have done the actual research in the lab as a research scientist at the Institute of Applied Biology on digestion. Hope that answers your question. Rita from New Jersey. Hi, Rita.
Paul.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi, Gary. I had a colonoscopy on Friday, and I'm still in pain from that. I can't even sit down right. You know, getting up and sitting down is extremely painful.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's two things that might help. Generally, colonoscopies are not that painful. So is there been any blood?
No.
Okay. Then I would suggest an aloe vera gel with cabbage juice. That can help soothe that out. And then make a tea, fennel tea. So fennel tea will help. Anise tea will help. Or you can combine the two together. And then you might want to sit on a magnetic seat cushion. And you can actually put the seat cushion down when you sleep at night, and that will help it as well.
Okay. Having an actual bowel movement?
Pardon me?
Will this also actually help having a bowel movement?
Well, what happens is it depends upon who did the colonoscopy and whether or not they traumatized any of the local tissue. That some of that, you need to regain your peristalsis, or the wave-like rhythmic movement of the intestine. And you need to have foods that have a good probiotic bacterial count to create the right form of stool. Not too hard, not too soft. And blueberries help with that. Vitamin C helps with that. If you had some brown rice, and beans, that would all help. That creates the right kind of fibrous material in the intestine to allow it to go through. And it generally will reestablish itself in about 24 to 48 hours. All the best to you, Rita. Bye. I'm Gary Knoll, going into the final segment of our program. Happy to take your calls. Always have good calls, good people listening, and I thank you for taking your time to listen. You can call us now at 888-874-4888. In a few minutes, Dr. Martin Feldman's going to come on board and tell us about sun. How much sun? What if we get too much? How to protect ourselves and the nutrients that our body requires. In fact, let's go over now and say hello to Marty so he has a chance to get his material in without being rushed. Hi, Marty.
Hi, Gary. You were talking a while back on the comprehensive aspect of vitamin D and cancer, whereby vitamin D is very, very helpful against all cancers, among many other benefits of vitamin D. Now, the summer is upon us, so many, many persons are now spending much more time out of doors with the sunlight. And a basic question would be, what is the relationship of the sunlight to vitamin D production? And we just have to understand that the body takes in the ultraviolet B, UVB, ultraviolet B rays from the sun on the skin and produces vitamin D with the help of cholesterol and other factors. Actually, technically, vitamin D is a hormone because the body can make it on its own with sunlight. And the question arises, what are the factors involved with how much vitamin D is produced with how much sunlight and how much, what are the factors producing this amount of vitamin D in the body? And here are some of the major factors. First off would be the sun itself. So whereby the angle of the sun's rays are very important. The time of day whereby the sun is strongest, UVB, around noon, and earlier in the day and later in the day, the UVB is less. And the critical issue is how far are we north of the equator? And next major thing about sun exposure would be the season of the year. So we have to go back a step. If we look at some cities out there in terms of some of these factors, we'll take first off Miami. Miami at noon in the summer, 6 minutes of exposure will produce about 1,000 IUs of vitamin D in a healthy person. In 1 hour, therefore, you get 10,000 units of IU in Miami summer at 1 hour at noon. Now, we go to Miami at winter time at noon. 1 hour will only be about 3,000 to 4,000 in that ballpark. It's a much, much, much less amount, by literally 50% or less. Then what if we go more north? What if we consider, say, Boston itself? Boston in the summer, 1 hour is only 1,000 IUs produced, much, much less than Miami. In the winter in Boston, literally almost no ability to have much vitamin D at all. So it depends on where you are in the latitude. Now also, sunscreen, which even a low sunscreen such as 8, blocker of 8, can block up to 95% of the UVB rays. So that sunscreen really reduces the vitamin D a tremendous, tremendous amount. Skin itself, the type of skin, fair skin, what's been called fair skin with only mild burning capacity. That means it's sort of a skin that's pretty fair, and this is how they define some of these things. And those persons can do very, very well in producing the vitamin D, and they don't have to tan the skin or redden the skin to produce the you can get a good amount of vitamin D without tanning or reddening. So reddening or tanning is not to be part of the, let's say, the goal of this whole project with getting vitamin D. And what part of the body produces the D best? Well, 40% of the entire skin surface should be exposed ideally, and the torso does much better than the face in terms of the vitamin D. What if we want to test our vitamin D levels? Well, that's very, very simple these days because we have now good technology. And what you want to test is the 25-hydroxy vitamin D level. There's a universal code anywhere in America. This code, CPT-82306, CPT-82306. And more conventional doctors are into vitamin D testing. I think it's one of the main areas where nutrition is moving toward mainstream, at least is one area, because they know how to order this thing on their laboratory requisition. They do it. They get back numbers. They don't usually know how to interpret it well. You would like to have that number come back 50 or more, 50, 55, 60, something in that ballpark, to have optimal vitamin D from either sunlight, if it's possible, in the summer, or if it's in the wintertime. Most people need, with minimal sun exposure, 4,000 to 5,000 IUs per day as sort of a pretty good level, 4,000 to 5,000 IUs per day. Now, one of the complications is the conventional doctors, if they do see that the vitamin D level is low, they tend to give a prescription, writing out a prescription, for vitamin D, 50,000 units once a week, something of that nature, 50,000 units once a week. It doesn't make any sense because you can take 7,000 IU per day every day for 7 days and get the same amount. Plus, they tend to give you vitamin, not the vitamin D3, which is the optimal form. They tend to give it more of a prescribed type of D, not the natural.
Marty, we're coming up the end of this segment. You'll have to just summarize, please.
Okay. Summary is this. We have the technology out there. We know a little bit about sun helping with vitamin D. It's a critical, important nutrient, especially for, among many other things, cancer, as you mentioned. and therefore we should really honor our vitamin D, and we should be out in the sun, but not to get red or tan to destroy the skin for other problems down the road.
Thanks a lot, Marty. Appreciate it. That's Dr. Martin Feldman. He can be reached at 212-744-4413. Time for two more calls here. Renee from New Jersey. Hi, Renee.
Gary?
Yes, hi.
Hi, Gary. I have candida, and now as a result of that, 2 years ago I got one of my big toe has fungus, and then my feet started, you know, to burn. I mean I got a lot of it was itchy, and so I've been trying to use...
Okay, just listen up. I'm going to give you what you need to know, all right? First off, understand that candida, which is a single-cell fungus, it's present in a lot of different people's intestinal tract. If you've had sugar or if you've had fermented foods, that's one way of getting it. But once you get it, it can be common in your mouth, your ears, your nose, your toenails, your fingernails, your gastrointestinal tract, and vagina. I don't think, Renee, you have to worry about the vagina, but every place else you might have it. Now, look at your mood swings. Look at stress. Do you have any problem with colitis or constipation, fatigue, joint pain, sore throat, congesting, any nagging cough? Those are some of the symptoms.
And Actually,
I see a lot of times people don't pay attention to what is one of the most important causes, stress. Stress, either transient stress that is acute or chronic stress, lowers the immune system. And really what we're doing is we're not going after a particular microorganisms. We're trying to raise the immune system. To do that, I suggest yoga, meditation, spending time in nature, de-stressing, laughing, going to comedies, comedy clubs, expanding your social network, spend time with friends. This is so important. This is as important as taking the 10 billion probiotic twice a day, or taking caprylic acid as directed, or taking dioxychlor twice a day, 5 drops, or taking black currant seed oil and flaxseed oil, or garlic, or quercetin, or bromelain, or B-complex, 100 milligrams 3 times a day, or biotin, 50 milligrams, 2 milligrams 3 times a day, or B12, 2 milligrams a day, coenzyme A, as directed, and L-cysteine, which is important, 500 milligrams twice a day, and vitamin C, also, an aloe vera juice, and just putting some olive leaf extract into the system and spraying the toenail with colloidal silver makes all the difference in the world. And Paldiarco, which is an important antimicrobial, antifungal agent, and it does have an alkaloid base. And so you have all this going for you, but you have to do it all in balance. Just going on an anti-candida diet is not the answer. People can go on every gluten-free grain there is, like brown rice and millet, for example, and they can eat all the right things, but they've got to de-stress. If you de-stress and do it all together, then the immune system recovers, and then with the recovered immune system, the body starts to kill off the candida. Thanks for your call, Renee. Chenise from Vermont, you're on. You're the last caller.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi. I see vitamin C in the bulk section of my food co-ops. What is the difference between that vitamin C and the supplement?
Well, they're both supplements.
It's, oh.
They're both, it depends, what differentiates vitamin C is how it's bound and what the carrier is that it comes with. Is it buffered? Does it come from calcium ascorbate? Does it come from potassium ascorbate? Because it's the ascorbate that you want, because that's what the body will convert ascorbic acid into. So having the best buffering agent, having a high bioavailable vitamin C is preferable. The cheaper vitamin Cs, generally sold in the drugstores, have low bioavailability and are generally ascorbic acid, so you're going to hit bowel tolerance quickly. And whereas if you take a high-quality vitamin C, you can get a lot more into your body before you end up with hitting either diarrhea or loose stools. Okay? All the best to you. I'm Gary Knoll. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for taking your time to listen today. Always appreciate it. And, of course, every show is archived, so if you miss something, please go to progressiveradionetwork.com, go to the archives, and we cross-reference all of our shows. Now it's time for Michael Rupert. Let's say hello to Michael Rupert, who's standing by to do his program. Hi, Michael.
Hi, Gary.
What's your show on today?
Well, we've got a lot of different things to cover, but I think the one that I'm most angry about, and we're going to start off the show after I do a couple of headlines. There's a woman in Oak Park, Michigan, who's facing 93 days in jail for growing vegetables in her front yard.
Yeah, yeah. She went against an ordinance, but the ordinance, she's a mother of six, by the way.
Yes.
And this is a middle-class working area, and the problem is that the ordinance says suitable, meaning any plant that's suitable. So I'll let you take it from there. I was going to tell the woman tomorrow I would pay for the best attorney in the entire state.
Absolutely.
To take on her case, and it would cost me $10,000. I'm so sick of bureaucrats, and I'm so sick of the liberals and the Democrats saying that all we need is a bigger government. We need effective government. There is a difference. We need bureaucrats not to live off of us, but to support their work that enhances the quality of our lives. And
we're
going
to take that one and smack it out of the park tonight.
Well, good. It's time, because this is exactly why many of us, myself included, are so sick of people telling us what we can and cannot do with our own property as if they have nothing else better to do. And I'm saying, we're paying these jerks. We're paying their salaries. No. There's a time when you have to stop being, even if it's a heartbeat away from insanity, stop being an ideologue for a moment and look at the reality of what you're supporting. By the way, tomorrow, I'm dealing with what happened in just a 100-day period of where we're going with our international new Cold War campaign, and show you how bad it's getting for another group of bureaucrats that nobody pays attention to, and that's the neocons. Have a great show, Michael.
Thanks, Gary. Take care. Have a good week.
Bye.